Oh my goodness, hold on to your hats this afternoon, folks. I got a live wire with me this afternoon. Ken Coffey is the Executive Director of Self Regional Healthcare Foundation, and he is a pistol. And you know, people say that about you all the time. You are energized, you are excited about what you do, and you have certainly brought that to Greenwood, to Self Regional. We were just talking about your past and how you've been involved in politics and county commissioners and all this kind of stuff up in Maryland. What do you say about the ride?
And first, let me thank you for having me on the show, and thank you for your kind words. This whole journey has been, you probably couldn't even think it up as to how we got here. What I can tell you is that my family and I love it here. We are privileged and proud and honored to be part of this community. And in particular, I'm grateful to be part of the Self Regional Healthcare team. It's a terrific hospital. And our community and our region should be very proud of having a healthcare system like what we have here today, because there's lots of places around this country that don't have that doesn't have the access to healthcare that we do right here in Greenwood.
Well, Jeff, just having had triple bypass surgery and spending 20 days in CICU, I can tell you we got super, super treatment.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I'm glad he's back. I met him out here a few minutes ago, and he looked good, and I'm glad that his outcome was a good one.
Absolutely. So we are very, very lucky to have this, and I know you want to talk about some of the things that are happening over there at Self Regional, but, you know, coming from Maryland down here, how did you get from there to here? I think people would be interested in that story.
Well, most of my, I have a number of, I've made a number of really good friends here already, and I'm really thankful for that and blessed. It's not a real long story. About 4.5 years ago, my wife and I went to a retirement expo. It was in Tysons Corner, Virginia, which is about an hour or so from where I lived in Maryland. At the time, I was 58. We went to this thing in the middle of February, and it was after the pro football season, which is the big deal up there versus here with college and so forth. And this was a thing that was put on by a group called Ideal Living, and they had about 50 different communities from 9 different states, from Florida to Pennsylvania, ocean to mountain, as far west as Tennessee. And it was just one of those days where we thought, let's go start thinking about where we might want to retire. And I knew I didn't want to be in Maryland for lots of reasons, not the least of which is the weather, not the least of which are the taxes, and third, I guess, is just the congestion and so forth that's in that particular area. And we had vacationed 6 or 8 or 10 times on lakes through my marriage and with my family. And we looked at a couple of places in this expo that were on the shore. Mm-hmm. The one, though, that stuck out was Grand Harbor. And, you know, it's on a lake. And we thought, well, that's kind of cool. So anyways, we went back home after that, and we signed up on the websites for the 3 communities. And, you know, when you get to be my age, the thing that you're really concerned about is healthcare and access to it. And that was something we looked at all the communities that we kind of zeroed in on. I'd say 3 of them were in South Carolina, but the one we liked the most was Grand Harbor. And so we you know, went on the website working in the healthcare business. I got to know a little bit about Self in that way. Well, if you fast forward from there to about 3 years ago, I got an email from an executive search firm, and it was looking for a person for executive director, Self Regional Healthcare Foundation, Greenwood, South Carolina. And I thought, this is really strange. And so I printed the job description thing and brought it home to my wife, and I said, Janice, check this out. This is in Greenwood, South Carolina, where Grand Harbor is. And I said, you know, I think I probably ought to apply, because more than likely I'll get an interview. I mean, I'd been in my job up there for 28 and a half years, been very successful. We had raised a little over $60 million by the time I left. And so I end up getting the first interview and came down and thought, okay, pretty cool.
And you got to see the area in Grand Harbor while you
exactly.
were here, right?
And I told her, I said, you know, it's going to mean a trip or two to Greenwood to see if this is really a place where we want to live.
Right.
And so I get called back for a second interview, and this time they want to interview my wife with me. And at that point, I called my college roommate, a guy named Larry Disharoon, who about 9 years ago bought a place in somewhere in the South. I wasn't really sure where. He invited us down a few times. I knew it was on a lake, but I never paid much attention because I had a kid in college and was paying for that, and I had a daughter in high school, theater and marching band. It was just too much chaos, and it was a 9-hour drive to wherever it was, you know, $500 to fly. And I said, Larry, I'd love to come, but it's just life gets in the way.
Too complicated. Yes.
So I call him and say, hey, Larry, I'm up for a job in South Carolina. He said, whereabouts? I said, Greenwood. He said, Ken, my vacation house is on Lake Greenwood. He had a house up in Eagles Harbor. Then I thought, you know, something's a little bit, you know, you start do-do-do-do-do.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Stars are starting to line up. And interestingly, he sold his house in Eagles Harbor, but is now building a new house in Harborside. And he's retiring actually in 2 weeks and will be down here. This is one of my really close friends.
Yep.
And the interesting thing is, and I won't get into all this too much because your listeners are probably thinking this guy's a wacko, but one of the things that Larry kind of turned me on to in college when I met him in 1974 was Southern Rock. And I've been a Southern Rock guy ever since, and a huge Skynyrd, Charlie Daniels, Marshall Tucker Band, Allman Brothers, all that stuff. And that's been sort of, you know,
in your brain.
Yeah. And now I'm here living it. It's amazing. It's just amazing.
So I guess your wife passed the interview too, huh?
She did. I think we probably got the job because of her.
Okay.
Is what I think.
Okay.
So my daughter I have a 21-year-old daughter who's a junior at Lander. And she's doing great. Kind of a interesting story with her. She's a little sort of a transferred type thing, and that's worked out really well for her. My son, I have a 27-year-old son who's up in Maryland, and he's gainfully employed, college educated, and he's got a significant other, a lady friend, and he's making a life for himself up there. We keep trying to get him to come down here, and maybe someday he will. But he loves coming here. He loves the lake. We bought a house. One of the part of the shtick about getting here was my wife said, look, we're doing this. I want a house that makes it feel like we're on vacation every day, which meant living on the lake. And so we bought a house in the Summer Point community out towards, that's out sort of near Grand Harbor.
Right.
I'm an avid golfer. I'm not a particularly great golfer, but I love the game. And I made a decision early on that I didn't really want to live in a golf community just because of the ups and downs of the economy.
You're close by.
Yeah,
there's plenty of golf courses all around.
That's right, I'm in with some of the best guys in town here for golf buddies. I mean, Jim Martin, Mark Riddle, Val Ballantyne, Chip Witt, Michael
they let
Meredith.
You play with them,
they
huh?
do, yeah. And I'm probably the D player in that group, but they let me play because I play fast.
Well, that's terrific. You know, it's great when somebody finds their passion, which is healthcare, and to find a place that you love, and you've been able to come together. It's very unique, though, that y'all had picked out Greenwood with Grand Harbor, and it's just time just lined up the stars.
It really is. It's an amazing story, and I've been very blessed in lots of ways throughout my career, both in healthcare, but also in county government. There was a couple of things that happened, similar sorts of, good things happened, and so it's all, I guess, part of a bigger plan, and it's all good. So
that's terrific. Well, you know, we have this thing called the Symetra Tour.
Yes.
Coming up with, of course, the self-regional healthcare classic.
Women's Healthcare
classic,
that's right.
That just puts it all together. And what a great idea that was, to put healthcare and golf and women's golf and healthcare together, because women are the ones that just kind of, I'll catch it later.
Yeah. It really was, I think, a grand idea that Jim and Denise Medford had, I guess, going back probably, this is the fifth year, and it probably was conceived before that, obviously, to get the thing planning and so forth. But it's been a very good thing for Self Regional Healthcare Foundation. After this year, we probably will have raised from that event around $250,000 to benefit women's healthcare services in Greenwood and the Lakelands region. It's been a good thing for this community, and it's a good thing for golf. And you know, on a sad note, this will be the last tournament. But I think you know, all in all, it's been a good thing for Greenwood and a good thing for this foundation. And you know, we're proud and honored to be part of that event. The festivities, it all starts up on May the 7th. We're only a few weeks out now, and there's I think one of the really cool things that Jim and Denise added were these the Legends Tour players and the pro-ams. I had the incredible good fortune to play last year with Nancy Lopez,
right?
Who was just an absolute delight.
And I've interviewed her many times. Yes,
and just an amazing lady. And the year before, I played with Amy Alcott, who was the designer of the golf course for the Olympics down there in South America, and.
The talent that these women golfers have. Yeah. It is unbelievable that they don't get more accolades out there, you know?
Well, you know, if you look, and it's interesting because some of these girls can play. And,
right.
I mean, the winner, not last year, but the year before, was Madeline Sagstrom, who has made it big on the LPGA Tour and actually last year played on the Solheim Cup team against the United States. And she's a player. And, I mean, so there's,
to
your point.
But their names are not like Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer.
And you know, and it's interesting about that. I think the LPGA has done a good job over the last, you know, half dozen years or so. I mean, and they've, you know, Michelle Wee added a lot to women's golf, Paula Creamer, Christy Kerr, Natalie Gulbis. There's a bunch of them that Annika Sorenstam, Lorena Ochoa. I mean, these ladies can play golf with the best of them, and I mean I find myself watching the LPGA Tour a lot of reasons because their swing speeds are very similar to what most of us guys are, and they hit clubs similar to what we hit, so it's kind of fun to watch and dream about, you know, playing on the playing for, you know, for the big time like they are.
Yeah, exactly.
Emphasis on dream.
Dream, yeah, absolutely. Well, I know that with what has been done with the Women's Healthcare Classic, they've been able to contribute to a lot of women's charities.
Yep.
They've been able to, like bringing the health bus out there and showing, giving little tests, health treat, you know, to be able to identify things. But again, I think the biggest thing we need to do in today's world is let women know it's okay to get checked.
Well, that's right. And you know, in our, you know, the old adage of an ounce of prevention beats a pound of cure couldn't be more apropos for a lot of different kinds of women's health issues. And fortunately, you know, we've taken a leadership role in those kinds of screenings and tests and so forth at Self Regional. And you know, we're in the, and we'll talk, I imagine, a little bit about some of the things that are going on over at the hospital right now. But, you know, we're in the midst of launched a campaign and major renovations to the a complete makeover of the childbirth center. And, you know, that's a mission critical project for Self Regional and for this community. And, you know, the other piece is ambulatory care services. And, you know, I think everybody out there probably recognizes, you know, if you look back 10, 15 years ago, most of the patient revenue may not even be that far in some places, but most of the patient revenue came from inpatient admissions. Well, You know, now most of it comes from outpatient services. You know, more and more things are being done on an outpatient basis, and
we'll just look at the surgery center, or the outpatient surgery center.
Yeah. And so, you know, part of this campaign is really aimed at that particular part of our mission to make sure that we have convenient and state of the art facilities for those kinds of patients, and you know, both of those, and in the end, all of them are they're patient centered. And you know, our ultimate goal is to improve the patient experience when folks do come to need those types of services.
Well, and you want it to be a place where people want to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I think healthcare has become such a boondoggle, really, the way that it has come down and the changes and then the changes, and it just it makes it difficult.
Well, and it does. And I think one of the other challenges for our region is, you know, we're seeing this, you know, in the recruitment of physicians. You know, we have about 450 docs that are active and referral staff at Self Regional. But 190 of those docs are self medical group docs, where they're essentially employed physicians, and
that's become a change.
Yeah,
that's become a big change because it used to be everybody's practice was separate,
it was private,
and now
some of that's a function of just the particularly the IT technology that's required under so many of the regulatory kinds of things that are going on. Some of it's a function of doctors not wanting to be landlords. They don't want to be HR persons. They don't want to be purchasing managers. They don't want to be accountants to deal with the billing and all that stuff. And you
they
know,
want
the
to
doctors
do
want
their job.
They want to take care of patients.
Sure.
And that's central to really that whole move, which I think has been a plus for Greenwood and the Lakelands region. Now, it's not without its challenges, and I think we've like many hospitals across this country that are going down that route. You know, the communication between doctors is critical. You might have an admitting doc who then kind of hands over the care to a hospitalist or an intensivist and so forth, and that communication between them can be a challenge sometimes, but that's something that we're constantly working on, just like every hospital is really.
Well, didn't you just put in a new computer system?
Yes.
That Jeff
Epic.
Was in the hospital starting the first of March, and it was in the process of coming online.
The conversion, and that was all hands on deck that first week, and I think you know, that's a work in progress for us, and mm-hmm. and it's again, it's a, you know, anytime change comes, it's tough, and
how many employees are there at the hospital?
Total,
at the hospital system,
the
I
system,
guess we should say
the system's probably about 2,500 FTEs, full time equivalents. We're the largest employer, of course, in Greenwood and the Lakelands.
So that's 2,500 employees that have to all be trained on a computer system. Talk about something that's...
And then physicians who, you know, who you know, it's just, it's, you know, the whole electronic medical record is
different.
Challenging. Yeah, yeah.
And then they want you to have your own portal
so
you can go on in there and look at your records.
Look at your thing.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
tell me what I need to do. Don't tell me I have to go in and look at all this stuff. Yeah.
And I hear you. And the interesting thing is, you know, and we're probably close to the same age. I'm probably a little older. But, you know, younger folks get that stuff,
right? They don't mind at all,
and
don't let me talk to the doctor, let me just read about it here. Yes.
And with, you know, all the websites that are out there for, you know, illnesses and diseases and so forth, you know, I try not to look at any of that stuff before I go see my doctor, because if I did, I'd have every disease known to mankind, you know, a little twitch. And but you know, now,
right,
you get it's not unusual to have patients who've researched what they think they've got, and if or if they have something, they
Well, how about all the advertising on TV, the direct, go to your doctor and tell them you need this drug.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, these are the 5 million side effects.
Yeah.
I think I'll keep the disease.
It's interesting because those side effects things, they go through that so fast, it's like, you know, you don't even know what they're saying half
right.
the time.
May cause death. I think I'll pass on that drug. No, but I do think that that's very interesting. And actually, with Jeff getting ready to have triple bypass, I actually didn't go online and look at it.
Wow,
and I'm glad I didn't, because if I had read all the stuff that could go wrong, stuff like that, we might not have done this.
Well, but, you know, again, I think that that's all part of the challenge, because we take care of all comers at the hospital, and regardless of ability to pay, and we you know, there's different levels of knowledge, and you know, our goal is to try to, again, make that put the patient at the center of the care, and do the best thing we can to ensure you know, the right outcome.
Right. And that's why, you know, somebody told me the other day, that's why they call it practicing, because everybody's always practicing to get perfect, to get the perfect care. And it's difficult.
It's very difficult.
And everybody has a different view of it, even amongst doctors.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and that's, yeah. And, you know, it gets back to sort of what I said a minute ago. You know, I mean, the whole notion of an ounce of prevention beats a pound of cure is you know, is really important. And that's why lifestyle, you know, wellness, eating right, you know, doing the right thing around exercise. And I struggle with both of those things and have for my entire life.
And I bet you work a lot too.
And you know, in our line of work, there's a lot of meetings and breakfast, lunches and dinners and, you know, social stuff. And you know, 15 years ago, it was a little easier for me to get to a gym and be excited about it. Now, not so much.
that's reality, folks, right? That is reality.
But I think, you know, part of the thing, and we you know, and I'm no doctor, but I've stayed at a Holiday Inn Express a couple of times. And I mean, when it's sugar and fats and carbs and all this stuff, you know, there's moderation is probably the best thing around all that. So.
Absolutely. Well, let's hear South Carolina Radio News. We'll be back. My very special guest today, Ken Coffey. He is Executive Director of Self Regional Healthcare Foundation. We'll be right back. The antique vintager has arrived in Greenwood. He's been in Greenwood, but he's been incognito. Now unveiled for the very first time, the antique vintager, the one and only Jeff Eller, is debuting on the national stage with his podcast. Shouldn't you be one of the first to come in and see him and see what you have with What's It Worth? Can you sell it? Do you want to sell it? And should you sell it? Only the antique vintager can tell you such things. So come and see us at 637 Durst Avenue East. Call first for your appointment. 864-229-6613. The antique vintager, Jeff Eller, is in the building. All right, we're right back here having some good conversation with Ken Coffey. He is the Executive Director of Self Regional Healthcare. We've been talking about how we ended up here, and you know, so many people end up here in Greenwood through just nefarious, you know, wouldn't have even thought of coming to Greenwood. And I think that's one of the things that makes this community so good.
I agree. I've told my friends in Maryland, and a lot of my friends that are natives here probably don't like this, but this is like a little diamond in the rough down here, I think. We're far enough away from the maddening crowds in Columbia and Greenville, but close enough if we want to get there for whatever we need. Otherwise, this town has pretty much everything you could want.
It keeps growing, and it's got good growth going.
And there's been good vision, I think, from our government officials, and you know, trying to do the right thing around preserving and or increasing or improving the economic vitality of the county. And you know, we've got terrific economic development efforts going on with Greenwood Partnership Alliance, and so
education is coming on board, and all the different aspects of that.
Yep, and Piedmont Tech with their big improvements coming on. So there's something here for everybody if they look for it. And that's the sign of a good community. Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's
absolutely
exactly right.
And the lake is just becoming another hidden gem become much more known about. But, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about was the Midwinter Ball at 30 years.
Yes.
Going from the Civic Center right after the circus.
Yep.
You know.
Oh, I heard about that.
And what a neat thing to have it at the Greenwood Country Club there.
Well, that was a leap of faith in many ways. We knew we had the 30th anniversary kind of theme, and we wanted to, the thing out Little River Multicultural Center is just one of the things that I've heard from the two previous balls in terms of constructive criticism was it's just too far out of town,
mm-hmm.
and so we really felt like if we could figure out a way to get it back in town, it would I think kind of lift
bring it up.
And I mean much of the credit for that goes to Thornwell Dunlap and Val Ballantyne, who I met with probably last year to begin discussions on how we might go about bringing it back into town. And and we kind of had a pretty good idea that if we had a great band, we knew we were going to have great food, and all we really needed that night, and we got it, was great weather. The rest took care of itself. And I think there was a lot of positive feedback from that event that we've received, and it was a great privilege for me to honor the past ball chairs that have been part of that event for 30 years and part of our foundation and part of our fundraising efforts. So that was a really cool part. We had Lane Orcutt, who's one of our foundation board members, hosted a little champagne brunch for our past ball chairs, which was a neat way to recognize them and thank them for their efforts. And then, of course, we had the ball, and it was a big night. And all those owners, John Stroud and Stephen Davis was a big part of it because he felt confident that we could pull it off. And so John and Farrell had a nice little pre-ball party for some of our key supporters and so forth. So it was a really special night. And the cool part was we had a lot of people who walked into that tent. And we transformed the tent from being a tent. I mean, it was
no longer a tent.
It was cool.
Yeah.
If I heard it once, I heard it a dozen times. Just, gosh, I feel like I'm in Atlanta or Charlotte or Greenville or someplace like that. And so, the ambiance was special. And again, who would have thought we'd get 75 degree temperatures on February 24th?
And we had 45 yesterday.
I think
the fundraising part of it, the camaraderie of it, I mean, it really brought it all together. And I think it's really special when a foundation is able to keep reinventing itself, to be able to keep things fresh.
Yeah.
And, that's a key, because quite often you lose things in events because they just become stale.
Yeah. Yeah. And next year we've already decided to keep the band. We actually made some arrangements today to secure them. They were an amazing band. And we've already talked to, the guys at the club a little bit about coming back there. And we're praying real hard for good weather. But it was a pretty good move for us, and I think it got a lot of people who maybe shied away from the ball because it was so far away.
Right.
I think it was interesting because we heard a lot of after the ball said, "Gosh, I wish I'd have been there that because it sounded like it was great." And so that's the kind of energy we want for next year. And we'll do our best to make it better than it was this year. I told those guys at the club that it'd be nice if they put a little more fill dirt on the end of that driving range so we could add another section of tent and get another 200 people in there.
Well, who knows? They might do it.
We'll see. We'll see.
But anyways, I mean, I think.
But thank you for your comments on that. And
yeah.
You know, hats off to Ann Magruder and Jackie Smith for being our honorary ball chairs. I think they enjoyed it, and I certainly enjoyed it. And again, want to just reiterate my appreciation on behalf of our foundation to all of the people who've been involved with that event for these last 30 years. And we said cheers to 30 years, and here's cheers to the next 30 years.
Absolutely. So that's what makes that very popular. And that's a big fundraising event for y'all.
Yeah. Yeah. We, special events like that, unless you have a really, really outstanding silent auction mm-hmm. kind of thing. And I've heard of these ones in Greenville and Charlotte and places like that where they'll do, you know, somebody will come in and say, "Well, look, I'll bid $250,000 for that if you can get somebody else to do the same." And you know, five right. minutes later, there's $500,000 on the table. And our silent auction is great. And
we haven't cracked that numbers yet.
No, and Jennifer Larkins does a terrific job for us on that. But generally speaking, in the fundraising area, you know, events like that are. They're as much about friend raising as they are fundraising. And we netted about $87,000 from this year's ball, which is the most we've done in probably the last five balls. So we were happy about that, of course. But we also, I think, there was a younger crowd there a little bit, which was nice.
That's a step in the right direction.
And some of the older folks, you know, were there because it was back in town. So I think we did good. I think we did good with that. So.
That's great. Now, of course, you're always trying to raise money when you're a foundation. And in fact, while Jeff was in the hospital, you had you turned up some dirt for the new fundraising. In fact, Jeff was on CICU, so he was on the fourth floor of the old part of the hospital.
Yeah. Yep.
So what's going to be going on?
Well, we, as you alluded to, we have been in what I would call the silent phase of this capital campaign for probably the last 12 to 14 months. And much of that time was really to kind of organize our infrastructure. We built some committees that are involved in really three things, providing more education about healthcare in the community, develop more and better recognition of individuals, businesses, and foundations that support us, and ultimately increase charitable gift income through a coordinated program of these, what I'll call giving clubs. And I'll come back to those in a minute. But the last 12 months or so, knowing that we had three projects on the horizon, the hospital, to its credit, goes through a master facility planning process probably every 5 to 10 years, and we're in the last stages of what was the last master facility planning process, and in that master facility plan, it called for three projects that I mentioned earlier, mission critical for us. One is a makeover of the childbirth center, renovation and expansion of our ambulatory care service line, and renovation of the emergency department, and those three projects represent, in this master facility plan, about $29 million of investment that the hospital will make over the course of the next 3 to 5 years. And those are three projects that our foundation board of trustees and our five committees, we have five committees now that are involved in this whole campaign, felt were tailor-made for fundraising. And the truth is that they touch more lives than any other organization in the region, and I could give you the stats, but we, you know, we do about 1,400 childbirths a year, hundreds of thousands of lab tests, x-ray, physical therapy, home health, radiation, IV therapy, outpatient surgery, hundreds of thousands of those. And then through the emergency department, those are outpatient kinds of things. Through the emergency department, last year we saw just over 57,000 patients in an ER that was really designed to take care of about 35,000 patients a year.
Wow.
So that's
pushing the limits.
It totally is. And
that pushes your people, too.
It does, and it pushes the patients of our patients because you've got an ER that was designed and opened in the late 90s, excuse me, and it needs a makeover. It needs one of the challenges for every ER in this country is, the 57,000 patients that we see or saw last year, probably more than half of them were really not true emergencies. These are folks that come in that use the ER for their primary care. They may not have a doctor. The doctor's office may be closed. It's the safety net for everybody, regardless of their ability to play. So anybody who doesn't have the resources to go see a doctor, they come to the emergency room. And that situation places incredible pressure on the emergency department. And so one of the things that we're looking at there is to come up with a better way to deal with some of those less serious injuries, to maybe separate them from the heart attacks and the car accident victims and the behavioral health patients and
more of that triaging type thing. Yes.
And really get them the door to doctor, improve that experience, and try to get those folks out in a more timely way. And so that's a big piece of it. The actual planning for the emergency department will probably begin later this spring or summer. But we're already underway. We did turn some dirt on a couple of weeks ago for the childbirth center and the ambulatory care. The childbirth center is often the first experience anybody has with a hospital. And it's,
well, as a newborn, yes. No, just
and, well, the newborns, but also the younger, the childbearing age families.
Right, exactly.
Most of them, knock on wood, are healthy in most ways. And other than maybe the emergency room, it's the first experience with an inpatient kind of a situation. And so, and childbirth's one of those things where parents will choose a hospital based on the amenities, the ambiance of the rooms and so forth. And our childbirth center, opened, I think the current one opened in the late 90s or early 2000.
And a lot of changes.
And if you go up there, it looks like it. And so we want to create a more
welcoming,
almost like a hotel experience up there with the rooms and the look and so forth. And because parents, moms will choose childbirth's one of those ones where it's a consumer kind of thing. And so now one of the things that I think gives us an advantage is having a NICU, a level 3 NICU here. And because as moms wait longer to have babies, the risk for complications increase.
Yes,
and when, low birth weight, respiratory distress and other complications that occur based at birth, we've got NICU capabilities right there and can take care of those babies for the most part.
I think I read something about a express elevator.
Yes.
Take you right there.
Well, and that's one of the challenges right now is after normal business hours, if a mom's in labor, she comes in through the emergency room, which is several hundred yards across the hospital over Hill and Dale, and in a wheelchair and all that, dad drops mom off. He's got to go find a parking spot and figure out how to get up to the childbirth center.
Sure.
So, one of the really cool pieces to this, the ambulatory care and childbirth renovation is a creation of a new entrance over there, with a dedicated elevator so that after hours, moms will have the ability to get in through those doors, go in that elevator at second floor, boom, they're right up there into the childbirth center and ready to go rather than have to come in through the emergency department.
Entrance, sure.
That's a big deal for moms.
When time is of the essence, yeah. Yes, that's
and
right.
So, having never experienced labor, and I don't want to, I can understand why that's a really – that's a patient centered kind of approach to the way we're trying to you know, to do that.
Well, hospitals have changed. Hospitals are changing. I mean, just look at the cancer center that they built up there. I mean, we didn't have
beautiful.
A cancer. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Beautiful, and it's excellent team of physicians and you know, other team member, self-regional team members over there to take care of those patients. And
And I think the indoor garden.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you look at the atmosphere, which is, I think, what you're talking about creating in the childbirth center is
That's
to
right.
have something more welcoming.
That's right.
More soothing.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. You know, the foundation provided a nice baby grand piano for the lobby of the cancer center, which is a really, you know, when you're waiting in there or, you know, your loved ones are waiting out there, it kind of helps pass the time. And that's you're right. That's exactly right.
That's right. So that's things to look forward to. Now, just out of curiosity, when would these things be built?
Well, the Childbirth Center and Ambulatory Care is underway right now. I expect it'll be probably about 18 months before they're done. And then the emergency department piece will start probably in late 2019 or thereabouts. I do want to say one thing, and I almost forgot. I certainly want to send thanks out to the Self Family Foundation for providing what basically is the lead gift for our campaign. They've made a matching grant opportunity for us. They're going to give $500,000 to these projects. But in order to get it, it's tied to physician giving.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think that's another thing a lot of people don't realize is that the physicians give back.
Oh, they do.
You know,
not
only in their healthcare, not only in the special projects that they do working with United Ministry and all these different clinics and stuff.
Yep.
They give back their money.
No question. And I think our hope, too, is they share some of their time and some of their talents and we're going to ask them. Actually, I've got a medical staff meeting tonight to make a little awareness about this matching grant from the Self Family Foundation. And we've already had five physicians commit to $170,000 towards that match. And so we're excited about the opportunity.
Yeah.
And you know, with as many physicians on our staff that you know I mentioned earlier. Confidence is high that we'll get to that $500,000. I would say too that we've had a number of other gifts over this campaign. We revamped our Madame Curie Society a couple years ago and changed it from basically an annual gift to a pledge. And we've added 54 new Madame Curie Society members in just a little over a year and a half. And those pledges start at $10,000 and go up to, we have levels of 25, 50, 75, 100,000 and higher. And those 54 new commitments represent almost $1 million in new cash and pledges toward this campaign. So the good news is we're typically in any campaign, you like to have about half of the goal kind of pledged.
Right.
And I'm happy to report that we've got about $5.1 million in cash and pledges already, and we announced that at the groundbreaking a couple weeks ago. We've not set officially a goal, but I think our goal is probably at the moment $7.5 million. But I feel like we're probably going to exceed that. And you know, I think one of the things, and we sort of talked about this offline here, but you know, this is the Greenwoods Hospital, and you know, in some ways, it's you know, philanthropy is an interesting phenomenon in this country. Probably one of the few countries in the world that really understand philanthropy, and you know, in our case, in a lot of ways, it's enlightened philanthropy because you never know when you're going to need that hospital. God forbid, I could leave here tonight and be in a car accident and end up in the emergency room, and you know, when you have, God forbid, those sorts of things happen, you want your hospital to be the best it can be. And it's tougher and tougher for hospitals now to have excess revenues over expenses. And hospitals are being asked to do more than ever before with less resources than ever before. And that's where philanthropy can fill that void. And we really excited. We've got about 60 people now involved in our foundation and these five committees that I alluded to. And again, these folks are sharing some of their wealth and their wisdom to help make self-regional the best hospital it can be. And that's, for our community, that's a good thing.
Well, you know, you think about some communities where they've lost a hospital.
That's right.
And what a terrible thing that is from that standpoint. And to have quality health care and have it not only right here in Greenwood, but in the surrounding areas through the tentacles, shall we say,
right,
of self-regional, is a definite plus.
Well, and you hit on something that's really important as we go forward. And, you know, we now have, you know, outpatient facilities in Lawrence, Newberry. We have physicians over in Saluda, Edgefield, McCormick. And, you know, those five counties and Abbeville are in our service area. Those are the sort of the convenience factor for folks who live in those communities where they can get their primary care. They can get a lot of their, you know, the basic kinds of things, right there in their hometown or home community. But when something more serious and, you know, tertiary care is needed, you've got easy access, you know, basically a 30, 35, 40 minute drive versus an hour drive in some of those places, and maybe longer depending on traffic, you know, to get to world-class healthcare services and facilities. And so we're, from the foundation standpoint, one of the things that we're really going to start to do over the, really the, it was part of my, I guess, my 3 to 5 year kind of strategy, and the foundation's board strategy was to really start looking into some of these other communities and engaging them in with more service and education on healthcare. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, our hope is to engage them philanthropically. And it's interesting. I was down at Savannah Lakes for a golf tournament a month or so ago, and you know, they have a really cool golf tournament down there for the residents of that neighborhood, that or community. That the only way you can play it is if you had a joint replacement. And now, you know,
this is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Yeah.
So
did you get to play?
No, I don't have. I have some titanium staples from a hernia repair, but I didn't get to play in that. But you know,
that was the handicap, right? Go ahead. Sorry.
but the vast majority of those folks down there had their joint replacement surgeries done here at Self, and it was a great event. And you know, there's a lot of really positive feelings about self-regional for those folks, and
absolutely,
you know, and having that kind of care right here is a plus. And you know,
well,
having
if
these,
you are the family of somebody that is in the hospital, speaking from experience here, you know, to be 10 minutes from the hospital,
yeah, that's right,
is such an advantage.
It totally is. And you know, and having these facilities, you know, Lawrence and Newberry and others.
All the surrounding ones.
You know, having those there for pre-op testing and so forth, and then post-op follow-up is you know, because a lot of our specialists will rotate into those communities, you know, and be able to see their patients, you know, after the fact, so they don't have to come all the way come to Greenwood. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's I will say our experience with CICU there was just awesome. I will say the nurses, the doctors, you know, and they would all say, you know, if something is bothering you, if something seems wrong, if you have a problem with something, please tell me.
That's right.
And you know, I think that's a big plus, to not just gripe about something and have nobody do anything about it. Please tell me, and I'll do what to make it right.
Well, and I'm there's a shout out here to our team members, and I'm not a patient care guy, but I know how hard they work, and I know how good they are, and you know, we've been recognized again by Gallup for the 11th consecutive year as a great place to work. We've received a number of other workplace awards, and you know, team members work hard, but they do great work for their patients, and that's a we're grateful for that.
Absolutely. That's a special calling to do that kind of work. I could tell you some stories, but I tell you what, they work pretty hard. Some of the stuff I wouldn't do there, folks.
it's hard work, but, and I think you used the word of calling, and I think that's right.
Yeah.
excuse me.
It's been quite an experience with Jeff, and although he's been in the hospital several times, this was quite an eye opener to see how hard they work in 24/7, and just to watch the whole thing. So, Ken Coffey, I know that we'll have you back again.
I'd like
because
that.
You'd like
fun.
To probably come back and talk some more about things that are happening with the foundation.
We can certainly give you updates on the campaign, and our donor report will be coming out in the next couple of weeks. And when some of the folks out there, your listeners, get it, there's a lot of names in there of people who've contributed to Self Regional Healthcare Foundation, and we will forever be indebted to those folks who do that. Want to really give a big shout out to the Foundation Board of Trustees. These folks are involved not only at the governance level, but they're involved at the fundraising level, and that's a little bit of a change in some ways. We've got, I mentioned these five. We created five standing committees in our bylaws, and our board members, our foundation board members, are actively involved in the fundraising efforts from soup to nuts, couldn't do it without them, to be truthful. And their leadership and their commitment is essential to our success. In philanthropy, it's often comes down to the right person asking the right person at the right time. And I'm happy to report that we have a lot of the right people on our committees. And when they come out there asking to some of your listeners, I hope you'll respond in a positive way.
Absolutely. And of course, I guess we'll see you out and about at the Symetra Tour, Self-Regional Healthcare. There'll be a lot of stuff going on since this is probably going to be the last one. Everybody really needs to get out and see what an awesome, awesome program is put on out there. And you guys really contribute to make it great.
Well, I hope people will take a chance to get out there, because there's some great golf going on, and this will be bittersweet in a lot of ways for us, but we're grateful to be part of it again, and hope we get good weather and get some great golf out there.
Absolutely. Ken Coffey, thanks so much for being with
Thank
us here
you,
today.
Thank you very much.
All right. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.